And when I told my full story that I then reported my perpetrator and he was in prison, that piece of it seemed so hopeful to certain people that I know at least two people went and reported their crimes because of my story.
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. Once she realized that her story of putting her perpetrator behind bars was inspiring others to speak up and call for justice, Tori Ivanek knew she had to put her story in a book. But how? Tune in to hear how Tori healed her body and mind in open spaces, how she navigated the memoir writing process and the deeper layers of healing in just 3 months. You'll find out how she enlisted the permission of people in her past and the support of those in her present, and stayed true to her message even when her publisher insisted on a pseudonym. Most importantly, you'll hear how she shifted gears to stay on brand, even when it has meant abandoning her initial vision. It's time to get a cup of something delicious and enjoy these sips of story insanity with us. All right, welcome to Sips of Story Insanity, where we talk about the stories behind the stories with our friends and authors, speakers, thought leaders, healers, parents, and more. My team with my son, Aaron, who's not here today, and my sister, Alyssa.
Hi.
And some of my clients turned friends turned team members, Teddy.
Hi, y'all.
And Lori.
Hey, everyone.
They're here to help me make sure that we get the most yummy sips out of this conversation today. And it will be yummy. We have someone special with us today. Tori Ivanek. Is that how you say your last name? Ivanek?
Ivanek.
Ivanek is a road schooling mom. Did you hear that? A road schooling mom of two amazing children, traveling homeopath for those seeking natural healing, and lifelong adventure partner to her faithful husband of 12 years. She and her family have been on the road since November of 2020, living life differently. After authoring No Big Deal, she asked readers to open space for change, and life circumstances allowed her to lead by example. She's an avid reader seeking social justice and change through encouraging others to get outside their comfort zones and by consistently stepping outside of hers. Welcome, Tori.
Thank you.
Oh, so much to talk about today. It has been many years since you have worked on your book. What year did you launch it?
I published in July of 2018.
Okay. And we started in 2017, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. April of 2017.
Yeah, but you wrote it kind of fast. I remember I had this wild idea. I remember my dad passed suddenly at the beginning of 2017. And a few weeks later, I was in one of Ursula's spaces. And you have worked with Ursula, so you know what that's like, where it's like all these great ideas come to you. Like, I could totally do this. And I realized that one of the things that need to happen with my work was I need to have people with me longer at retreats, because we'd get these great outlines together and then I'd send them off and no writing would get done. And so you were at the very first retreat where we actually
did this, where we actually did, you know, went beyond just outlining and getting clear, and we actually started the writing process. So I'd love for you to share what that was like at that retreat, because I know it was a little bit different than what you had hoped or anticipated. And just what was it like to actually get into the writing process?
Well, I'm not sure that I realized that was the first time you'd ever done that.
Surprise. But
I was not physically there. I was Zooming, which, you know, would not have been my preference at all. I love to be in the same room with people. But at that time in my life, you know, my kids were like 8 and 6, and I was not going to be able to leave for a week. I mean, like, it sounds so ridiculous now, but it's true. Like, it would not have been possible for me to leave for a whole week, with my husband having a full-time job and being, he just couldn't do all the things. So I did it virtually. He definitely stepped up and gave me a lot of space. Like, the kids were in school for the day, and so I could be on Zoom, and then I would have my assignments and I would have my writing. And it actually was way better than I ever would have thought a Zoom retreat would be. I mostly was in my basement, which was kind of weird, but also, like, it was like my writing cave. And I could kind of compartmentalize, because my story was a hard one and I didn't really want it like all out in my house.
Amen.
Yeah.
So glad you had that insight.
I kept it in the basement. But the one woman from that retreat, one of the other clients of yours, has become a very close friend. Like, we've stayed in contact and masterminded together, and you know, still to this day are very, very close. But what I think amazed me the most was, like, after the couple, I don't know, I don't remember like the timeline of it, but after the matrix was given to me, I was like, oh, I see how to do this. And I just went like, bam, bam, bam. And I had like the introduction and at least a first draft of the first, I believe, 5 chapters at the end of that week. And I was like, I could just see it, you know, like I could see the book. And so it just made it so much easier to just like knock it out. Yeah. Even though it was a really gnarly, you know, hard story to write.
I remember you saying, wow, this is actually fun. And I was like, huh, because you're writing about the hardest thing. So let's go back a little bit into, like, what inspired the book? Why did you feel like you had to write this gnarly story?
Yes. Okay, well, first I have to kind of tell you what the gnarly story is so that I can tell you why I wrote the gnarly story. So the quick 5-minute version of the story is that when I was 15 years old, I was sexually abused by my gymnastics coach. And he had been abusing a teammate of mine that was just a little over a year older than me for several years before I got involved. And so this was in the late 90s, and you know, honestly, at the time, the thought of that, I it would not have crossed my mind to say that I was sexually abused, to say that I may have used the word molested, but the word rape was not in my vocabulary for my teammate, or, you know what I mean? Like, it just was something we didn't talk about. And so I held that for a long, long time. And then when I was about 30, so that happened when I was 15, when I was 30, I reached back out to that teammate to see how she was doing, because I had called off an engagement and I was like, maybe it's not all the men I'm dating. maybe some of the issue lies here. So I started seeing a counselor, and I decided to reach out to my friend, because I was also a mandated reporter at the time, and I was hearing other people's stories, and it was starting to like sink into me that, oh, hey, maybe that wasn't not that big of a deal. So when I reached out to her, we had these very parallel lives. We both owned our own houses. We both had big Labradors. We did not have functional relationships. We were very like controlling of our little worlds. We loved our jobs. And I pretty much laid it out for her. I was like, I think we should go to the police. And thank the Lord, she agreed. Because for her, it was a much different story than for me. She still lived back where it happened. There was a lot more integration in her life that was going to be uprooted. I was clear out in California at that time. And so long story short, we ended up going reporting him to the police. 8 months later, he got arrested because of another, a chiropractic patient of his had come forward and reported him. And then a full year after that, we actually went to trial because he was offered a plea deal of 4 years in prison and he did not take that. So we went to a jury trial. We went to a 5-day long jury trial and he ended up with 43 years in prison. Mm. So that was 2008 that he ended up in prison. Then I was like, oh, I healed that story, right? Like justice. Oh my gosh, I'm good. You know, I got married the next year. I had a baby the following year, like just life. Like as soon as we told our truth, actually to the police, both my girlfriend and I found our husbands like within the same month. Weird things like that. You can't make that story up, right?
You can't.
So I had my kiddos. And then in 2015, which was the same year that I met Amanda, I had signed up for this self-development, business development thing that I met Amanda at. And right before it happened, like maybe a few weeks before we went to Costa Rica, a pastor, or not a pastor, a worship leader at my church was arrested on like very similar counts. He was 30, the girls were in their teens, he was a music teacher, the girls were going to his house. But at this stage, 2015, all those girls had cell phones in their pockets and they thought it was super cool to take videos of themselves. So they had great, like great, what's it called?
Evidence. You know,
evidence, yes, mm-hmm. That's the word. And so he went to jail, but it, for me as a parent, like my kids were never in his care or anything. I wasn't close with this person. But it wasn't like beep, 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 mama radar, like don't go anywhere near that guy, you know? So I just was like, oh my gosh, like right in my midst. And I think I just started talking about my story more because it was so in my face that I was like, this happened to me, you know? And as I started talking about my story more, many people related or had similar stories. And when I told my full story that I then reported my perpetrator and he was in prison, that piece of it seemed so hopeful to certain people that I know at least two people went and reported their crimes because of my story. And so that right there was the reason that I was like, maybe it's worth writing this story. And then I met you, you know, and it was like,
Well, you didn't just meet me. I feel like there were like three or four story/book people in that community, which I have been in a lot of personal and business development communities, and never have I ever in a group of 20 people seen four people who do this.
Right.
Bizarre.
That's true. And I think that was another reason that I felt like, well, this must be meant to happen. Like all these people could help me. And you were the one that I chose pretty easily. But also there were other authors in that group and I had never hung out with authors. You know, my background was as a physician assistant. And when you go into medicine, you kind of hang out with a bunch of people in medicine and they're not usually creative author people. So that group of humans for sure was a huge catalyst. But the conversation, I remember a conversation we had because we had a conversation in Costa Rica, but then we were somehow just like, oh yeah, we should jump on the phone. And I remember talking to you as I was walking around, because I took it out of my house. I had to go across the street to the parking lot and walking around this parking lot, talking to you on the phone about this story that I wanted to write and how gentle you were and how supportive you were about that story and how to, you know, like it's possible to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, for people listening and watching, like, I want to just like put a little pin in this, I'm taking it out of my house thing. I want to get back to your story, but this is so important. I'm so glad that you intuitively knew to do this because so many people get the idea and start to write and then don't realize why the people in their home start acting nuts. And sometimes they even start acting like some of the villains that you're writing about. And so I found that out the hard way with another person who had been in a really ugly power dynamic. And she called me one day and she was like, oh my God, like this angel man who has been put in her life, never acted this way ever before. He started to do these behaviors. And I was like, well, were you writing in your house? And she was like, yeah, just don't do it. Just don't do it. Find another safe place. Mm-hmm. Or have some rituals in and out. So anyway, okay, pin out of that. Because that's really, really important. So when you, I love to, as you were talking, I was thinking about how funny it is that we both signed up for that business and professional development program. And we didn't end up like doing the things that we went there to do. Right? It's like there's always another thing that happens in the creative process. We have this idea and we go do the thing and then we get directed to the people. Yeah. Or.
Well, and I actually, when I reflect back on that, I love that about that program specifically. I don't feel any like regrets or, you know what I mean? Like, I think that was one of the beautiful gifts of that program was it wasn't about like, oh, and you're going to hit this number in your sales or whatever. It was like, oh, and if this doesn't feel right, let it go, you know? And I've let many things go since then, for sure. Yeah.
So you have this idea. We met, we had the conversation, and I remember, I think it's really important for listeners to hear about your process, because you did work on this project a little bit before you got to the point of asking for help. So I'd love for you to share kind of what that's like to go it alone in that experience.
Yeah, that's actually, yes. So let's see, 2015, right at the end of that program, I ended up moving to Colorado, the end of 2015. Yeah. So there was a whole year went by where I was like moving and my kids and, you know, like reassessing and coming in. And then 2016, Donald Trump was elected president. And November is the NaNoWriMo month. And I had known about that movement that, you know, like 50,000 words in a month and you can write your own novel. And it was always intriguing to me because I had always wanted to write a book. And so I took that month and I decided I just wanted to see if I had enough content to write a book about it. Like, I knew I had a lot of memories, but I didn't know if I could actually put enough in there to write a book about it. So what I did was I started with day one, I would write a letter to my perpetrator and I would just like let it all out. Like, I remember this. I remember you did this. I remember, you know, or you are this or whatever. I would just like kind of vent to him. And then the next day, on the opposite day, I would write about something I did to heal. And for me, like that wasn't therapy. It wasn't drugs. It wasn't any kind of like medical stuff, really. It was like outdoor adventure stuff. So from the time I was like 20-ish, like I was always a skier. And then I moved to Colorado right after college and I was rock climbing and I was telemark skiing. And those are the things that I wrote about, yoga and hiking by myself and all the things that I felt had healed me. You know, like if you would have asked me at 25, had I healed from this, I would have said, yeah, of course I have, right? And then if you would have asked me again at 30, I would have been like, of course I have. And so like, there's different degrees of healing all through a process like this. And so I just started writing about all the different things that I had thought helped me heal. So right before Thanksgiving, I was like, all right, I'm not going to write about this during Thanksgiving, because it definitely brought up a lot of stuff for me. And I wasn't in my best mindset to like have Thanksgiving dinner with everybody. So I had about 22, I think, like days worth of writing, which were 1500 to 2000 words, maybe each day. So I looked at that and I was like, that's a lot of words, you know, like it's almost 40,000 words maybe. And I could tell by looking at that, like, yes, I have enough. So did Thanksgiving, put it aside till after Christmas because didn't want to live in that space. And then I, on like beginning of January, I think I started trying to write it chronologically. And that's when I reached out to you and I sent stuff to you and you were like, yeah, I think you have a lot of good content here. And I was like, I don't know what to do, you know? And that's when you said, well, in April, I'm having this retreat. And I think that was what I needed, was like a container, like a boom, like just do this week and see what happens. And so that was April of 2017.
Mm-hmm. And the book was written by...
So the book was written by July of 2017. It was finished because after the first five chapters in the intro in April, I set aside every Wednesday. Like I used to have like clients Monday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or something. On Wednesdays, I didn't let any clients schedule and it was just my writing day. And I would just try and get one chapter written. And even if it was a really crappy first draft, that's all I would do that day. And then if like, that would usually take 3 or 4 hours maybe longer sometimes, but then if I had more time before I had to pick up the kids, I would go back to the chapter prior and like do a read through of that one and see where the, you know, big gaps were, or, you know, try to like make it better than the worst first draft. And so each week I would knock out a chapter, and I think I had a total of like 22 chapters or something. So by July, that was my birthday, in July, I remember hiking on my birthday and I was like, this is the last chapter, you know, like this day. And so, yeah, it took about 4 months to like get a good solid first draft of the whole book done.
What was it like? Because like I said, at that retreat, I remember, I think it was around chapter 4, it was towards the end of the retreat, and you were like, wow, I'm having fun. And I'm thinking, that is crazy, because you're writing about, I mean, you know, the first several chapters of the book are all about how the grooming happened, right? Like what set the stage for the grooming to be possible without someone seeing or stepping in. So yeah, there's all of this material that normally I'm expecting, like someone's going to be like, you know, I need to go pound some pavement. And this woman's like, I'm having fun. So like, what, talk about that, the experience of the actual writing, because it had to be mixed.
So, well, it was definitely mixed, but I think one of the fun part for me was going back into my childhood in a sense. And I didn't focus all on the negative parts, right? Mm-hmm. I like got to describe where I did gymnastics. And I loved that space, you know, like I loved that gym. Like, even though there were bad parts to that space at the end of my story, like in my first, like I started gymnastics when I was 3 years old and I didn't meet my coach until I was about 10, you know, so there were years of me just loving that space and describing my friends from those times and my parents and like the childhood home I grew up in. And so it, you know, I minored in English in college, but I never really played with it much. I never really wrote that much, but that creative process for me, like, oh, I was just having so much fun with that. And, you know, it was this really interesting ability to go back and see myself for the innocent that I was, and like, God, how could I have ever thought that this was my fault, you know, or that it was like something I could have prevented, right? Like just putting myself into those, like into the leotard again, you know, like remembering getting ready for practice and how, you know, tired I'd be at the end of practice and, you know, eating McDonald's on the way home and all those things. I'm like, I was just a little kid, you know? So that was the fun part for sure. And then, you know, a lot of the book is about my past relationships, because that was like what I think really hit home, was that I couldn't have good, healthy, functional relationships. And for the longest time, every time I would type the word relationship, I would always put a T at the end. So it was relationship. And that was just always funny to me. And you know, I dated really great men, like really great men, but it was just not, I was not functionally ready because of the wounds that I had not healed.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed writing about like dancing with my, you know, high school boyfriend, and it was fun, right? Like going back and reliving the moments and being able to, you know, see yourself the way, you know, you hope other people saw you. and not like the way you're constantly beating yourself up in your head about what you could have done differently or did wrong or whatever. So
yeah,
that's
huge. So you write about all of these other relationships, which then force some conversations around like, we need to reach out to these people. We need to figure out permissions and what was that process like?
Yeah, that's where I called you and was like, this is like a 12-step program. And it was, and I'm glad I did it. And I'm glad they all, you know, I don't think it was super easy for every single one of them, but most of them, I think, were like, whatever. I changed all their names. There's definitely like, everybody takes on different like elements of guilt and shame and whatever with pieces of a story like this. And I think I was doing so much processing and I expected people to like be where I was when I called them on the phone. And that's not necessarily the case. But they all supported me for sure. And they, and even like other high school friends, because it's tough for me to talk about like with the people that were involved in my life at the time, because a lot of them didn't know at all. And then they're like, why didn't you ever tell me? And it's just an interesting dynamic. But even some high school friends have circled back and just like personal messaged me through Facebook or something and said, like, I'm really proud of you for doing what you're doing. Especially people in like one specifically is like a high school principal. And so I think he really sees like the dangers of that power dynamic of a coach or a teacher preying upon young people. And so, yeah, those conversations were not necessarily easy, but most of them were really, really good conversations. And I felt supported by my past partners.
Yeah. Well, and one thing too that you and I've had private conversations about is like, you know, there's that piece of bringing old stuff up in a new space, in a new relationship. So is there anything that you could share that you'd be willing to share? Because I know you have an amazing husband who was like by your side through this whole thing, but like, was there any conversations leading into it? Any ways that you kind of set yourself up for success? Or is he just like a superhero?
He's pretty much a superhero. He's always been supportive of me. I think the things that I worry about when I entered into like this is really like the cost. Like I'm not generating any income with like diving into this whole intense story. In fact, I'm spending more money than I'm making, you know, to write this book. And I'm going into a place of like deep, dark depression stuff to a degree, you know. The fact that he supports me doing that has always been amazing to me. But I also think that he sees like the growth that happens with it. And he and I, like we literally met, I believe it was the week before I went home to report my coach. So I met this guy and I was like, so next weekend I'm flying to Ohio. Like the guy was like, oh, you know, but he didn't run, you know, and he was not like, I don't want to date this girl, you know, I mean, like, and then less than a month later, so I went home and reported him. And then I had to do a tapped phone call to my coach. And Jay, who is my husband, was not living like near me. He was living a couple hours away, and it was a Thursday night. So it wasn't even like a non-work night. He came to my house to be at my house while I was on the phone with my coach. And like, he, you know, that's my husband, right? Like that guy is husband potential. And he was just solid through that whole time. I was taking a full year off drinking. So I was not just taking any alcohol in at all that year. And that's another thing where like, you start dating somebody, you want to go out and have a couple drinks. Like we were, I was like, nope, not drinking. And he was still just solid. Like, that's cool, whatever, you know? So yeah, from day one, he's been super supportive about the whole thing. And it does get hard sometimes when I'm in my head about these things, because I can get really, I wouldn't call it like anti-men, but kind of, you know, like I can get really judgy about this kind of white male mentality of like, it's hard for me to even put it into words, but I see it sometimes even in my very good husband. I'm like, you are a very really awesome, amazing human. And you don't understand that you're a privileged white male. Like, you don't understand that I couldn't walk in that room and have the same experience that you just had. Mm-hmm. So it has led to interesting conversations like that. And he hears me. You know, it's not like click, he can understand it all, but he hears me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. It's such an undertaking for, and I think that's something that just a lot of people don't understand. They think they're just going to go do this thing and that it's not going to disrupt. This disruption potential is so huge. So when I see a spouse like step up to support in all the ways, the financial, the emotional, the taking care of the kids for during the extra hours and all the extra runs that you did while you were processing, like, it's amazing. Yep. It's amazing. And it's just so important that people understand, like, at least try to set that up for success. Don't just jump in and then wonder why things are crazy. 'Cause it happens. Yeah.
Expect the disruption.
Expect that it.
That would sell retreats, right? Just call it expect the disruption.
It's true. Oh my gosh. So much happened in like 3 months. You write the book, you do a whole bunch of processing, you talk to all of your old relationships, and then what? Like, what happened during that year?
So I probably hadn't talked to, like, the relationship talking and all that stuff started happening after I finished the whole draft, because I wanted to share the whole thing with people to make sure they were good with everything I said, not just like their piece, but everything. And so, you know, I shared it with my family. And I had purchased, before I even started working with you, I think I had purchased a self-publishing package. And I didn't know what that meant. I just thought, well, somebody's going to help me at least like put this thing in a book and put a cover on it and whatever. And then I had been very clear with him from the beginning, like, I'm using my real name and I'm using his real name because this is public record and I don't want to write a, you know, anonymous book about sexual abuse, because everybody keeps sexual abuse anonymous, right? Like, that's the point of writing the book, is to tell the truth and to not hide it. So I got the first draft done and I sent it to them, and they sent me this kind of like, oh, you have to change this, this, and this, or whatever, and, you know, protect people's privacy, blah, blah, blah. And I had already changed the names at that point, but I hadn't necessarily pulled out like every single place, because again, if I'm keeping my name and his name, anybody could look this stuff up and figure out where I was and where it happened and everything. So I did a little bit of cleaning up of things and pulled out like the obvious stuff. And then I sent it back and I felt like I got like form document, boom, boom, boom. You know, this is not going to work. And you need to take a pen name, is what it kept saying. And I was like, I am not taking a GD pen name, right? So I think the third go around, like, I had a person that I could talk to on the phone, but they weren't really understanding what I was doing. And I finally was just like, I'm done. I'm out. If I can't write this the way that I want to write it, I'm done. So I pulled out of the self-publishing package, which I think I spent like a few thousand dollars on it. It wasn't ridiculous, but it was, you know, not money I was ready to just give away. And so they gave me like most of it back, except for like $350 or something. And so all of that, I was just like, fine, I'm out. And in the meantime, my kid's kindergarten teacher had become a good friend of mine, and I had shared the manuscript with her, and she read the whole thing like overnight, because every once in a while somebody will get it and they'll be like, I read it all last night. And she was like, she and I met at Starbucks. I remember like we're sitting at Starbucks and she's like, I want to help you. And so she was like, I want to edit this book for you, or I want to, and we just, she ended up becoming like this amazing person in my life that helped me do all the things that I didn't know how to do nor care to learn how to do. And just took the weight off of me of like if I wasn't going to publish it because I didn't know how to do the interior design, like, that's lame, right? So she would just figure it out. She'd just Google like how to do interior design and shoot. And she was amazing. And she continues to be an amazing force in my life. And then just pieces fell together. Like, a childhood friend is a graphic designer, and I reached out to him about like kind of an idea I had for the cover, which was like me standing there and like his shadow over me, like my coach is like big, because he was 6'2", like 220 pounds, and I was like 5'1", like 90 pounds, whatever. And so I just sent him like a silhouette of my picture from that year, and he made that cover, which is like my silhouette and then this like evil lurking shadow behind me. And I was like, boom, like that's it. And so just things just started falling into place, but it took a while. And so that was then, like, now we're into 2018, and my dad comes to visit for his 70th birthday and literally flies back to Ohio and dies in his chair like 5 days after he was with us. And that was just like, you know, like, whoa. So I was like really ready to publish, but then my dad died, you know, and all the dynamics that come with that, and my relationship with my brother, and just like the first death of a parent is like what just happened. And actually several of my uncles had died just within the 6 months prior to that, so it just felt like one thing after another. And then I find myself back in Ohio, right? Back in the town I grew up in, where like all that stuff still kind of lives for me. And this I put in my chapter in You Can't Make This Story Up, but we were in my dad's garage, and there was a poster hanging on the wall that said, that had a half-naked chick with a beer in her hand. And it said, "If at first you don't succeed, buy her another beer." So like, this is hanging in my dad's garage. It had for sure been there for at least 20 years, because it was probably like my brother's from when he lived there, you know, like in high school. And I, in my 40-year-old brain, like went to rip it down. And my brother like hesitated. He was like, "Hey, wait, you know, maybe my friend Pete wants that." And like, I can do all kinds of things in my brain and be like, "Oh, you know, it's just guys being guys," or whatever. But then my like 40-year-old brain switched back on, and I was like, "F that." And I just ripped it down and threw it away. But like, so much stuff comes up for me when I think about the fact that, you know, like my dad had that poster hanging on his wall for how many years? And like, what is it about this country, this culture, this society we live in, that somebody didn't say something many years ago, myself included, right? Like, I still am pulling these veils off where I'm like, whoa, like that's not okay. And so, you know, one of the things that I love that you did in the retreat, Amanda, was like movie assignments, right?
Yeah.
So my husband and I, you know, every once in a while, we'll pull up a 1980s movie and we're just appalled, right? We're like, "Oh my gosh, we watched this stuff when we were kids and we thought it was okay and or funny," right? And so even like Ghostbusters, when my kids, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I was like, "Oh, we should watch Ghostbusters." And the opening scene of Ghostbusters, Bill Murray is like zapping the male student and not zapping the female student. And it's, "Oh, funny, funny." And then he's hitting on her, right? And he's a college professor and he's hitting on his female student, and that's okay. Well, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but the new Ghostbusters, right at the end, Sigourney Weaver is like zapping Bill Murray. And so they spoke to it, which I love the fact that they spoke to it, you know, mm-hmm. because like, it's under my skin every mm-hmm. time I see something like that. We're like, these were the messages I was given as a child. It's cool to date your professor. It's okay if some old guy is hitting on you, you know, like, no, it's not, it's gross and it's not appropriate. And so that's the word that my kids will say all the time. They'll be like, "That's not appropriate." And I'm like, "Yes, you're right. That's not appropriate." And so they hear me say it a lot. It's like, "Nope, that's not appropriate." So I don't know, you know, like there's just layers and layers of all of this. And my dad's death definitely threw a wrench in like getting this thing out to the world, but I wasn't gonna let it stop me. And he definitely was supportive of it. I don't believe that he read the book, but I don't know if he ever read the book, but he was supportive when I went to the police, and he was supportive of me, you know, like all through all of that. And so I ended up publishing that year on my birthday, because it's a hard book to like celebrate. It's a weird thing to like, you're excited that you wrote this book and you're proud of yourself on some level, but you like, I literally have a hard time physically giving it to someone because I feel like it's so heavy, right? Like it's not a feel good, easy, like, you know, rah, rah, rah kind of book. Like for some people, it's really, they can't get through it. And so I had my launch on my birthday because I could justify throwing a party for myself on my birthday. And it went really, really well. Tons of people showed up that I was not expecting and people flew across the country for it. And it was fantastic. And then, right? And then
there's always an, and then people think that it's over when the book is done.
Right.
It's done. It's out in the world.
I did it. Yeah.
I'm healed.
Right. Yeah.
Because you do. You experience a lot of healing when you're working through that narrative, right? Like,
yeah.
Things have really changed. But to your point earlier, talking about, you know, going home.
Yeah.
And seeing that it's not just this isn't just my personal narrative. There's a collective narrative here.
Mm-hmm.
And the weight of that is crushing. It's crushing when you feel like that's up to you to make a dent. So tell us a little bit about the and then. Like I, you know, we talk about post-bookdom, right? Like afterwards, there's the natural like hormone fall that happens like after you have a baby, right? It's like you're working towards something. And then your body's like, wait a minute, that's not my space anymore. And I don't have to pay attention to it. And so it's real, but tell us about how that looked for you. Cause it's important.
Yeah. Well, I at first was like gung ho, like I'm gonna speak about it. I'm gonna do this and that. But I also knew in the back of my head, like, I don't want my whole life to be about talking about sexual abuse. Like, I don't want that. Like, I have a passion for it, but I also don't want like a 40-hour a week job focused on this. And so I was asked to do a keynote at a women's business thing. And it was just like a little 5-minute one, which I really enjoyed. And that was great. And then I also put my name in the hat for the following April to do a keynote back in California where I used to live. So those were two that were like good. And I prepped for them and I like felt really good about it. And, but I wasn't like pursuing it, right? Like I wasn't like throwing my one sheet out to all the people and trying to get speaking gigs about it. And, you know, not too many people are looking for people to speak about sexual abuse. So it's April is like Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I can pretty much guarantee that I could like go get speaking gigs for April because everybody's like talking about it then. But again, like, I just didn't know, like, what does this look like? I don't want to be the motivational speaker about sexual violation, like, or avoiding it or whatever. It's just not really my gig. And so I did a couple, but also that fall, like right after I published the book, then the whole Kavanaugh thing happened, which for me was really, really hard because like, it's not about necessarily like who's right and who's wrong and what actually happened. It's the way that he responded, the way, like there were so many different dynamics there that just really bothered me. Like I can go so far as to say like, maybe that did not happen at all. Let's just say, let's give her 100% she lied. Still, I want a Supreme Court justice to keep their composure, to be respectful, to if someone's lying about them, keep composed. And so like, there were so many things about that whole situation that was just like floored me. And like, from my perspective, I 100% like go to believing the woman because I know that I was telling the truth and hundreds of people called me liars on the internet, you know, like things when we first went to the police and it came out in the papers when he got arrested, there were 19 pages of comments on the article where he, you know, he got arrested. that said things like 15-year-old sluts then, 30-year-old sluts now that want money and stuff like that, where like that, like people didn't even know what they were talking about because we weren't going for money. This was not a civil case. It was a criminal case, you know? So like people think they know somebody. And so they just like, just say whatever they want, especially on the internet, right? So my bias is to go towards believing females because I know how low the statistics are that females will even go say anything, let alone go so far as to end up in a courtroom, right? And so there's been a lot of really hard things over the course of the last, you know, forever, but really like when I started writing the book in April was when all the Larry Nassar stuff came out. So like, what are the odds of that? That I'm writing a book about sexual abuse in gymnastics and this huge doctor in the world of Olympic gymnasts is getting like on the news every single day, more gymnasts. So like, I did not know what the Me Too movement was when I was writing my book. It was out a little bit, but it definitely like, I didn't call it a Me Too story until way later because I didn't know what Me Too was because I wasn't like, that wasn't my world. I didn't live in the world of talking about or thinking about sexual assault. But once I wrote the book and I started kind of learning more about the other big players in this world, like Tarana Burke, I actually got to meet her, which was awesome. And I've read her book now and just, you know, there are people who are made to do this work. And I'm not sure that's me necessarily. But I do think that like my work is more in speaking your truth, what regardless of what that is. It doesn't have to, you know, like be about sexual assault, but speaking your truth and being willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations in order to be healthier and happier. So anyway, like, yes, the Kavanaugh thing was really hard for me. The Cosby thing, but every, you know, I mean, I could just sit here and list names of men that were in the news and perpetrating, and I don't try and dig in and read every detail about all of it because I would go crazy. Mm-hmm. But I do tend to believe women because I know, you know, I know how I was treated as someone who was telling the truth. And I see so many women and men, you know, like it's not that men don't,
right,
get sexually abused or get told they're lying about it. But it's just my experience plays, yeah, into how I see those things for sure.
Yeah. So you were thinking about, you know, doing all the things, the speaking, you had business ideas, you had workshops planned, you had all these different things. And then you just kind of like other things are more important. And you know, I think one of the really important things that gets lost in this industry is like, we are not just messengers. We are people with lives. Mm-hmm. We have seasons where marriages need us to put all this stuff on the back burner and focus on that. And children, mm-hmm, are small enough that we can wait a few years before we're traveling and speaking and, you know, it's like there's all this, mm-hmm, pressure to make it look a certain way and to do all of these things to make it work. And it's like, yeah, but if you do all that and sacrifice all this,
right,
what was the point? What was, yeah, the point? It's usually perpetuating more of what we're trying to clear up. Right. Like,
right. Yeah.
Lack of integrity, lack of relationship, it puts us in this really sticky place. So I watched you like have all these ideas and then be like, no, I don't want to do that.
I kind of did that. Yeah. I was just like, yeah. But the one thing that I did that I now look back on, and I did it intentionally, but it still kind of hung there and haunted me a little bit, was like when I branded the book, like you were like, well, what's your platform or whatever? And I'm like, oh, because I didn't want to put it under homeopathy first, because it's not like a book about homeopathy. And it's not, I mean, it's kind of a healing book, but it's not like, it doesn't go with homeopathy at all, really. Mm-hmm. And so I did kind of rebrand with open space. And that is for me, like how I healed in nature. I healed in like letting go of things and just like walking away and doing something different and stuff like that. And so I at least got a website up that said open space, and that's where I put my book. And, you know, like I got a really cool little logo that I like. And I knew that that was kind of an open door, right? Like it could be anything. Open space doesn't mean sexual assault awareness, you know, like I didn't. So I left myself this like blank palette for whatever that turns into, which is great because now I just listed this next book, right, mm-hmm. on my open space website. And it doesn't seem like weird, like, well, what's that book doing here, you know? So it feels really good and really clean. And like, if I were to mentor other people, like that were starting businesses or anything like that, I would be like, set something up that's really big and really wide so you can fill whatever into that you want. You know, don't like start like, I mean, Homeopathy First is my first business and it's been great to me and I love it, but it's not who, you know, like I'm so much more than Homeopathy First. And so now it's like always like, well, there's this and then there's all this stuff. So open space is a good little catch-all for all of that. And I feel like I could build a lot of things out in that world that fit me. Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah. So what's next? Like, what are you, I mean, talk about this road schooling thing, because I feel like even though you feel like maybe you abandoned a plan, I feel like you're actually embodying the plan in another way. So tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Well, I guess I have to rewrite my bio because now it's boat schooling. it's not road schooling anymore. But I went to a yoga teacher training, which is something that I wanted to do forever. And I got to do that. I went to Mexico for 16 days in February of 2020. So right when I got back on March 6th, the world exploded into COVID craziness. And I actually had already planned to pull my son out to homeschool him for reasons outside of COVID. But then my daughter came home from school for virtual schooling the same day that my son started homeschooling. And so we had like that spring, May, April, May, you know, of virtual schooling and weird world and not going out of your house and nobody driving anywhere. And it was kind of lovely, right? Like there were pieces of it that I was like, oh, I haven't driven my car in 7 days. It's so nice. And my kids, like I was helping my son and I had constructed his curriculum, but I was watching my second grade daughter at the time, just like staring at a computer all day or getting all her work done in 30 minutes. And I was like, I don't know, you know? And so a few weeks into that, I started watching like, what's she doing? She's in second grade. She doesn't know how to type yet. Yet she's supposed to do these word problems on the computer and type out her answer. And so it takes her like 40 minutes just to like type her thinking in her word problem of how she got to the right answer that she got immediately, right? So I was just looking at that like, oh, I don't want her to do this. So I gave her the option. I'm like, okay, if we go back to this kind of learning in the fall, do you want to stay home with me or do you want to do the computer thing? And she was like, I want to do what you and Otis are doing. So we had already planned then. So we went through that whole summer and planned to homeschool again. And in the meantime, our neighborhood in Golden had just blown up like ridiculous prices for houses. And I didn't love my house anyway, like it was fine, but it wasn't like something like, oh, I'm gonna grow old here. And then what else was happening? I mean, my husband's work, like my husband's a really high level engineer basically. And if he doesn't have like something that's challenging him, he can go to work, but he's just like, you know, like he needs a project. He needs something that's pushing him. And he was kind of in a lull at work where they didn't really have anything for him to do. So he's kind of doing like menial tasks and he just wasn't that excited about it. So I was like, hey, you know, if we're not going to be able to ski all year, what are we doing here? Like, let's get out of here. So we basically decided, because we had always talked about taking a year off when our kids were about 9 and 11 and living on a boat in the Caribbean. So we had been saving, we had like financially set ourselves up to take a year off and travel. And I was like, let's just get an RV and just do it on land first, because COVID was going to be a nightmare with trying to go from island to island or country to country. And then the house thing happened where I was like, oh, we could get like a really whole lot of money for this house. And so I didn't even list the house. I just put it out there to my 7 book club friends, and one of their friends wanted to buy my house. And so I sold that house. I sold a rental house in California. We bought a condo in Colorado. We bought a little travel trailer, and we quit my husband's job and we packed up into the trailer and we left. So that was November of 2021, right? No, 2020. Yeah, mm-hmm. November 2020. And then we traveled the whole, like, so we went down the Baja Peninsula and we've been homeschooling, and then we learned about unschooling and like kind of all different thoughts on schooling, and watching our kids just kind of be creative and find tunnels that they want to go down. And my son is like really into fishing. My daughter loves to bake and loves to watch YouTube videos about baking and make these crazy cakes and things. And so letting them just kind of follow what they want to learn about, and, you know, thinking like, hey, COVID's happening anyway, who knows, if they're a little behind, I think it'll be all right. So we did like the Baja Peninsula of Mexico, and then we went through the southern US and clear up to Maine and then back down. And throughout this whole time, we were like, okay, well, next winter, be a good time to buy a boat and go to the Caribbean. And so, that's how we ended up. I'm in the boat right now. So we bought a boat the end of November last year, so 2021. We bought this big 44-foot sailboat called Cosmic Convergence. The name could not be more perfect. And we moved into a boat. So we moved from our RV into this 44-foot sailboat. The kids are so excited because they have their own rooms now. They had a little bunkhouse that they had to share in the RV. Now they have their own rooms with doors and everything. And we're currently about 2/3 of the way down Florida, getting ready in the next couple weeks to hop across to the Bahamas. And we have like 3.5 months worth of food stored on this boat, so we can really be like off-grid, self-sufficient, floating around in the ocean.
Wow.
I feel like that sounds like your next book title, Cosmic Convergence, Homeschooling, Road Schooling, and Boat Schooling.
Yes.
You know what's funny too, that you said that, Alyssa, because I was thinking at the beginning when you said, so I started the book, I got all this, and then there was a year where we moved and transitioned. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened here, because you contacted me in 2020 to start another book.
Yeah. And then there was a year.
Uh-huh. And you're like, actually, I need to hit pause on this because I'm going to go do this thing.
Totally. Yeah, I did. I was like, I think we decided to sell our house. I think I need to hit pause. Yeah, that was great. Oh, good. I'm glad you see the patterns.
Interesting. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's like next level disruption. So we put that out there, and then it's like, well, if you want to do that, then like all this stuff, how about we change that up and make it easier for you to do that thing that you said you wanted to do?
Yeah.
I'm so curious, Tori, if you don't mind sharing what your ideas for that next book were.
Yeah, that's a good question. So that kind of came out of COVID to a degree, and conversations I was having with women about, because like I think a lot of the things that I look back on as my healing processes were things that I was just passionate about, like skiing, right? Like I loved skiing as a kid, but I couldn't do it very much because I was a gymnast and you weren't allowed to like go skiing when you had a competitive season and stuff. And so then in college, like I was in Ohio, you don't ski that much there. But I moved out to Colorado immediately after that. And I just skied, like that's all I wanted to do. And then I also learned rock climbing. And I look back on those three, like I lived there from my age of 22 to 25 before I went to grad school. And I learned what I wanted to do on the weekends, right? So like once I got a real job, I knew what I wanted to do every weekend. And the people that I met that were the least healthy and the least happy were people that did not know what they wanted to do on their weekends, right? Like, hey, if I would ask this question of my homeopathic clients a lot, like if you had a full week off, nothing that you had to do. You had like whatever budget you need, $10,000 or $5,000 or whatever it is, what would you do? And when somebody cannot answer that question, I'm like, you are not a healthy person, right? Like if you don't know what you would do with a week off and $5,000 or $10,000, that's where I felt like there was this gap where people, and I think it's a lot because of our now, like reflecting back, our education system trains children to take tests and trains children to be like corporate American employees, but doesn't train children to be creative and pursue things that they're interested in and, you know, like follow their passions at all. So that was what that book was supposed to be about, was like kind of, you know, figuring out if you don't have a passion, how can you find one, right? Like, how do you do that? What does that look like? You're going to fail a lot because not everybody is good at knitting, right? Not everybody's good at writing. And so if you think you need to do this certain thing because all your friends are knitters and you suck at it, well, then go try and play tennis or something else, you know? And so like all the things that you need to do to figure out what it is that lights you up and makes you a happier, healthier human. And I have a bunch of notes on it, but it kind of like fizzled. I don't know. I think maybe, you know, that was the Elizabeth Gilbert, somebody else caught that one and took it, and that's okay.
Oh, maybe. Maybe not. I feel like you're actually getting all the content for that in this year off. I mean, I too had a really difficult junior high and high school. Socially, academically was fine, but socially was very difficult for me. And I struggled mm-hmm. to find other creative avenues because I was so focused on excelling academically. And mm-hmm. so I had met a family who did something similar to what you did, just sold everything, picked up and got on the road. And they were telling me stories about how they were traveling the world and the kids were studying what they were learning in the places that they were in learning them. And so yes. I would be so curious as someone who's, you know, doesn't have kids yet, what a model like that and the like technicalities of actually making it happen look like and what the options are, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so awesome that you're actually exploring all the different sort of ways to do that this year.
Yes. Like, yeah, I definitely feel like there's plenty of book potential in me right now. I just don't know that I can like regurgitate it on a cohesive level yet, but it's brewing in there for sure. Yeah.
I feel like the Caribbean's a great place for that to brew.
I know, right? Yes. Wait, can we do a retreat in the Caribbean? Can we do that?
Please. Okay. Yes, please.
I'm in.
I'll meet you. I'll come meet you. We'll do all the writing and then other stuff.
Yes.
It's really true because when I was 42, I was given the opportunity to move wherever I wanted to move, do whatever I wanted to do. And it was the most shocking thing. I had no idea.
Huh. Yeah.
You know, I didn't even know what color I liked. I didn't know what my favorite kind of food was. I was just so used to just doing what I had to do, needed to do, what was gonna, you know, it was just, I never thought about what I want. And it took me a lot of years, but you know, I mean, I ended up getting the first thing I thought, I want to live by the water. And I thought it was the beach because that's all I knew. So we moved to Newport Beach, to this place that I loved. And then I realized it was the bay that I loved, the bay with the boats and the houses. And my husband said, that's really expensive. You know, if you like lakes, if you want to live on a lake, we could do that. You know, and I started looking at pictures of lakes and I said, yes, that's it. You know, I say all that to say it took years to figure all that out because I had no idea. And I got to live, you know, in a home that just fed me 24/7 because I had figured all that out. I had figured out my colors. I had figured out, you know, it was just amazing. And I thought, I think it's really, how can you have joy and bliss if you don't know what you love and what lights you up, it's just impossible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said.
Tori,
I love your open.
Sorry. No, you're good. I was just gonna say, I'm really excited about this whole story because my husband and I, we just sold our house last week and have gone full time in our campers.
Congratulations.
So I'm excited for that adventure. I'm looking forward to it and to hear your story. It's just encouraging and uplifting, and I'm super, super excited. I mean, my kids are all grown and gone, but I've got grandkids. And so now it's going to be easier to go and spend time with them and take them on little trips. And part of my next project is writing children's books that teach and give tools. And so they're all about experiences I've had with my grandkids. So I feel like this is going to give me that opportunity to have those experiences with my kids and grandkids. So
yeah,
I'm right on board with you there, sister.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have to have a conversation. I can give you a bunch of heads up for sure.
Would love that.
Yeah.
Have you experienced resistance, controversy, static for this choice?
I'm not listening to it. if I have, I felt some when we moved into the RV for sure. Like, it was interesting because, like, in my opinion, moving into an RV with my family was very cautious when it came to COVID. But moving, you know, like traveling across the US, maybe not so cautious. Now, like, so COVID for me, like, we're on a boat, just ourselves. We're not being irresponsible out in the world. But so, like, COVID was more the judgment factor that I felt than, like, financially. But it is interesting, some people's perspective. Like, I called my brother the other day and he answered the phone, "How's retirement?" And I was like, "Yeah, not really retirement, right?" But, you know, like, it's his perspective, and my perspective is really different than that. And nobody, like, most people that I talk to are like, they want to be my children, right? Like,
hell yeah,
come with you. And really, like, it's helped Jay and I to really reinvent. Like, we both grew up in the Midwest where our parents worked hard, you know, 40 hours or 60 hours or 80 hours a week for years and years and years, you know, and saved a ton of money. And we are responsible with our money, but we don't want to work that much for the rest of our lives. I'll work till the day I die, but I'd rather work 20 hours a week every week until the day I die than 60 hours a week for two more years. You know what I mean? Like, we really appreciate balance and adventure as part of growth and living and showing our kids. Like, if I was thinking about it the other day, like, if we settled down again, we still have enough time to get to each continent during the summer at least with our kids before they are out of our house. And, like, in this day and age where we are such a global community, like, I think it's interesting. Like, my daughter, when we first got to the state of New York, she was like, "I didn't think New York would be like this," because she thought it was New York City, right? She thought all of New York was New York City. And so, like, even just those little things where, like, she knows what upstate New York looks like, and she's 9, you know, she knows what it feels like to be on the coast of Maine. I think there's so much learning going on that doesn't require books or internet or anything, that, like, just them experiencing our country and how it feels in different places and how people talk, right? Like, I say sir and ma'am now because I've been in the South for months and I never used to say those things, right? When I first had someone call me ma'am, I was like, I'm not that old. But I am totally like, yes, ma'am, that is perfect. You can call me that as many times as you want. So just those different things about our country, let alone getting them out into the world. I think the world is going to look a lot different in 10 years too, when these kids graduate from high school and undergraduate. Like, is it worth $150,000 for an undergraduate degree that may get you a job that pays you $40,000? Like, I don't know, right? Like, I mean, we need to think about these things and not just do what we did because that's what we did, right? So there's a lot of that going on.
Exactly. Just, and I feel like, you know, full circling this back to like your book and what you were inspired to share. And, you know, when we started to work on the book, it was like, one of the things that we talked about was how important it would be to show how this happened, right? To show the grooming process, to show how this could be happening with adults who cared about you, not knowing what was happening. And so, you know, when I think about that, we started there and looking at your childhood, looking at, you know, all of the conditions of the culture, the attention of the parents, all of these things that were factors, not for the sake of pushing blame or responsibility anywhere, but just for the sake of like, let's just look at how this is possible, right? Like how this happens, so that we can start to pay attention to our own experience and say, what are the things that we could do a little bit differently with our kids? Give a little bit more attention here. So, you know, full circle, I see you like you're doing the thing. You're putting your children in a space where they are becoming the type of people that stuff like that won't happen to ever, right? Not only because they have a mom that says that's inappropriate, but because they're building agency, they're building the ability to critically think, they're building the ability to be like, oh yeah, I'm taking the untraditional route. I don't have to do that because everyone else does. So all of those things, to me, I see you like, you're still pushing your message forward. You're just doing it on the home front. Yeah. And eventually it'll, you know, be in a book.
Yeah.
It'll be out in the world, but I think it's incredible.
I was just watching a show actually where the mom was so preoccupied with doing that work on the work front with the world that she did not realize that her kids were going completely off of the path and not realizing everything that like the mom had the wisdom and the agency to be able to teach them. So it's kind of that like solidify yourself in your home before, you know, you go out into the world thing before you start teaching those things.
Yeah.
Really
awesome. Well, and I think that's for real. And that's where like that second book that may be fizzling or we don't know. When it comes down to it, I think like it's mostly moms that I talk to about this. It's mostly women. They're mostly like really burnt out. Like I used to say, like almost every woman in the US has adrenal fatigue, right? If we are the moms that are raising the children and we don't know what we want or what we love or what lights us up, and we're basically just running on empty all the time, what are we teaching the kids then, right? Is that you give, give, give until there's nothing left of you, and that's how you live your life? Like, we know that's not the right way to teach our kids. And I have these conversations with women often of like, hey, you know, if you're not doing something that lights you up, how do you teach your kids that to pursue the things that light them up? You know? And I think it's totally true. Like some people love the corporate grind and the 40 hours a week and the 401ks and all that. And it served me well for a short period of time, but in the grand scheme of things, like, I don't want to be a cog in the wheel like that. I want to do different things and have balance and, you know, so yeah, I think it's interesting.
And I see so many, like Amanda said, all of the technical skills that you're just setting them up for success with, because so much of our world is just headed to being virtual that, you know, we don't necessarily need to learn how to be in production like classrooms any, you know, right. Going forward in the future, like that'll survive for a while, but it's really important for people to be able to learn behind a computer screen, learn how to learn behind a computer screen, you know?
Yeah.
The other ways.
Yeah. And learn how to catch a fish, right?
Yeah. Yes. Someone tried to get me to do that recently on a trip. And I was like, they're like, you've never caught a fish. No. And I've nope. Never done that before.
If you've eaten a fish, you should catch a fish.
Catch a fish and then get online and learn how to fillet it and cook it.
Yep. Season it. Yep. So much to learn.
So much to learn. Well, I feel like we could keep talking about this because it's super exciting to me. It was like one of those dreams for me that, you know, someday I would travel the world and take my kid and do all of that. And I just love seeing people do it. There was a family who actually owned the home that we first moved into in Oregon. And that's what they did. They took a full year off. And like the experience was just listening to the kids and hearing from the parents' perspective how much growth had taken place and how much transformation and strength and resilience they saw in their kids was just, it was incredible. So kudos to you, my friend. And I'm sure that there will be people listening to this or watching this and thinking, I want to be connected to this woman so that I can, one, get the book that's out already, or two, you know, be on the lookout for the other things that you'll be doing talking about this. So how can people connect with you?
Yeah, good question. Well, openspace4.com, that is the clay that has not yet been molded. So www.openspace4.com. And then on Instagram, we are Team Ivanic. So if you just want to watch the journey, that's there. And then my homeopathic practice is Homeopathy First. So that's homeopathy, the number one, st.com. So you can connect with me any of those ways. And I'm on Facebook too, but I don't spend a ton of time there. So.
Okay, good. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And we are recording this a little bit more than a week before we launched You Can't Make This Story Up. And so I'm excited to share the next chapter of our journey of like working through this process of collaborating on the book, because I think it's really important. You would laugh because one of the people in the book is setting up a clubhouse called like a clubhouse conversation to kind of promote the book, and it's called How to Collaborate to Heal, so instead of burning it all down like instead of letting it all burn to the ground, because you know, lots more people means lots more opportunity for messes. So I'm excited that you were part of this book, and I'm excited to interview you and talk about all the other things that happened along this journey, because it's always the next layer of healing, isn't it?
It's amazing how that works. Yep. I love it. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. And thanks to all of our listeners and viewers for enjoying this episode of Sips of Story and Sanity. If you liked what you heard, please consider leaving us a review or subscribing, or maybe even sharing your own private dream that you've been keeping to yourself, that maybe if you did a little more of that on the weekend, you'd be a happier, healthier person. And you know, everything is launching for the book, so you can find more details about our upcoming collaborative book in which Tori shares the next part of her story. Well, You Can't Make This Story Up, What If It's All Happening For Us, at truetointention.com. So that's it for today, y'all. It's a wrap.